Podcast.
I am one of the few people who think the Patriots are actually going to be really good this year.
Let's go!
Oh, God.
It's me. It's Kevin Wiles.
What a shocker. Surprise.
All right, welcome to the latest, our Bill Simmons podcast. Really happy to be coming to you guys tonight. And if you listened to the last one, we had a younger fan on, only been listening to Bill for a few years. So we got his perspective, how he started with NBA Desktop, got into Bill, now is listening to Russillo more. So today we're going back to the history books. We're going back 20 years. I myself, you guys know me. I started reading Bill in the mid-2000s, early 2000s, at Page 2 at ESPN, listened to the BS report immediately when he started in 2007. And the guest we have on today, same thing. So, Mike Raines, really a pleasure to have you, and I'm so looking forward to talking about Bill Simmons both today and how he has changed from 20 years ago.
Oh, as I told you before we started recording, like this pod is like kind of my dream pod because I've listened to Bill for so long and he's gone so aggressively off the rails that just being able to talk about him is in this like genre is awesome. It's just super fun for me.
I love it. All right, so let's do this. Let's do a little Bill Simmons current events, and then after that, I kind of want to get back to how it all started with you, and then I can share my stories as well. But just what are we working with here? Bill, with his overreactions, it never used to be this bad. It's gotten worse in the past few years, but I feel like he's really taken it up a notch this postseason.
Oh, well, the Nuggets Wolves thing, I actually listened to like the first bit of your last pod and you guys got a bit into the Nuggets Wolves thing. And I listened to that so I wouldn't be like repeating, but the thing that was so interesting in Bill's crazy "what if" pod, which he is now frantically backpedaling from and desperately pretending he didn't say all the things that he said, is that, as you guys said, he has literally been talking up the Nuggets as a generational team. Like, the Denver Nuggets are just incredible. Like, this is a world-beating team. Like, going into these playoffs, they were going to repeat. Like, this was going to be a dominant, his mentality was, who's going to stop these guys? Like, they're not going to lose this year, and we'll see about next year, and on and on and on. And that only injuries could really derail them. And then Minnesota wins the first two games of their series, and the opening of his "what if" segment begins with him stating, "This is Clubber Lang against Rocky," because he has to make everything about Rocky. The man is just trapped in amber when it comes to cultural references. And he just goes on and on about how Minnesota is beating the brakes off Denver, how they're speeding Jokic up, how like this is like the one team that's learned how to play defense against him.
He compares in the last 20 years, right?
Like, oh, a pantheon defense. He compares Ant to Bradley Cooper in Limitless because that's a movie that's really relevant. And who doesn't remember Bradley Cooper's star turn in Limitless? Just like, and then he, because all of these things that happened in this 20-minute soliloquy that he did were so Bill based. Basically, at one point, he's just sort of like, you know, the Wolves are going to sweep the Nuggets, and then they're going to win the NBA title. But what happens with Team USA after that? And it's just like, on what planet does someone think about like the Olympics roster and how those guys are going to gel together more than who wins the NBA title? Like, how is your like? How is that what you care about? How are you more concerned about how Team USA is going to look in this Summer Olympics than the NBA championship. It's just like so bizarre that that's immediately where his mind went to. Like that was his priority. He was just like, man, is Ant going to start for Team USA after he wins the NBA title? Like, why are you thinking about that? Who cares about the Olympics? Oh my God. It's just such a strange thing.
Yeah, it was absolutely incredible. I had forgotten about the Limitless comment, but I guarantee he watched that on HBO. Like he had that up on his main TV with all the NBA games on the side TVs, and he was watching Limitless with the iPad, tweeting, doing the classic Simmons. So that was great. I also loved the SNL piece. So again, he goes to his favorite pop culture, and yeah, SNL that can be popular, but I mean, Bill has this special love for it. So it's like, man, the NBA champion's going to have to host SNL. And what's that going to look like? So it was just, it was so classic, yeah. Bill.
Right. And it's like, because Jokic did SNL, right? No, he like flew back to Europe after he won the title. He doesn't care about this stuff. Like, it's just so strange, like the things that he cares about. But the main thing that that has happened since that ridiculous pod is that Bill and all of his sycophantic guests, who've been doing the whole now, Bill, you're not the one who overreacted on and said that Denver was done and that Minnesota was winning the title. It wasn't you, buddy. It was everybody else. It was all the other bad people who had that scorching hot take, which is again not true.
Yeah, I mean that Justin Termine pod was embarrassing. I could not believe that was happening.
It's shameful. And Bill's dodge that he's been using now is, oh, I thought Murray was hurt. That's been his big excuse. And if you go back and listen to the Wolf podcast, Jamal Murray comes up once 22 minutes in to the soliloquy he's giving. 22 minutes into the monologue, we get one line about Jamal Murray where he says, and Jamal Murray isn't 100%. That's it. It's a one throwaway line about Jamal Murray in that entire rant about how the Wolves have a pantheon defense, their Clubber Lang against the Nuggets' fat and out of shape Rocky Balboa, how Anthony Edwards is transcendent, all this stuff. And now Bill's just saying, look, I was only taking the Wolves because I thought Murray was playing on one leg. And the thing about this is that if that was the case, Bill had a Bill take perfectly lined up for that, which was because, and Bill talked about this before the regular season ended, which was the Wemby game where Wemby and a bunch of stiffs on the Spurs pull off the shocking upset. They beat Denver. That knocks Denver out of the one spot. OKC gets the one. So while Denver is able to maintain their home court, they get the 2-3 in the second round, which is Minnesota, and OKC gets the 1-4 against Dallas. They get the softer opponent. Bill could have had this whole narrative about how the Wolves just caught the Nuggets at the right time. Murray was hurt at the end of the Lakers series. The Wolves, because Denver lost that game to the Spurs, now they catch this enemy. They catch this bad matchup at the wrong time when they're a little hurt, and that Minnesota is going to pounce on it, and this is why Minnesota is going to win. And he had that take ready to go, and he didn't use it. Instead, he used the Anthony Edwards as ascendant and as the next king of the NBA. Minnesota's our next dynasty. Jokic is a bum. All of that. Like, he just, like, that is the actual take he's using. He's changed his take afterwards, and he's hoping people didn't notice it.
Well, and what I love, too, is that the guests clearly are aware that Bill had those takes and flip-flopped, but they also understand that they are reliant, if they want to keep being on the podcast, to not actually say it was Bill. So we had the absolutely classic from Russillo, not necessarily you, Bill, which is just so good. And I love that Russillo did that, and I think he's having more fun with Bill. And then the Termine, I think he basically said the entire thing, not you, Bill, because you had a legitimate reason, Jamal Murray. So I love that you brought up that it was only done once in 20 minutes, because that's what we do on this podcast. We fact check what Bill Simmons is doing. And this guy is completely misleading us about how seriously he took that injury. So yeah, it's one thing for Bill to do it, but I just couldn't believe, like, Russillo, I liked because it seemed like he was a funny pushback, but the Termine thing, I mean, the pure comedic parody value when I'm hearing that, I'm just laughing out loud listening to, I just could not believe that happened.
Oh, just bending the knee to the Podfather, just absolutely, like, you just thought Jamal Murray was banged up. That's why you did what you did, Bill. And again, that's, if you go back, like, Pearl Jam ends about 5 minutes in, and at the 27-minute mark of the pod is the first time Jamal Murray's name comes up. I mean, wow. it's just 22 straight minutes of, God, Minnesota's great. Man, Anthony Edwards dominant. Maybe the Rudy Gobert trade, not so bad. Like, all of that. And, like, then you just get one line about Murray maybe not being 100%. Now Bill's acting like, oh, I thought Murray was hobbling around on one leg out there, and the Nuggets were cooked because of the injury. And that's, again, that was not his take at all. It was ridiculous. And the one last thing I'll bring up, that's the weirdest thing beyond the Olympic basketball and the SNL and the movies, the one hangup that Bill has that's so bizarre is he's obsessed with needing an American star to be the face of.
Completely agree.
And it's like, who cares? Oh my God. Like, could you imagine walking over to Dana White and saying, man, wouldn't it be so much better if Conor McGregor was an American? I mean, wouldn't that just do so much more business for the UFC if Conor McGregor was from, like, Ohio or California? I mean, oh my God. Like, man, it sucks that Conor McGregor's from Ireland. It sucks that he's Irish. They haven't made a buck or two off of that. Oh my God. And, like, just the idea that the NBA is somehow lesser because its stars might be like from Europe, that Jokic or like Giannis or like Wemby, like the fact that a bunch of Europeans might be the new dominant force. Like, what kid is growing up like watching these guys crush people and going, you know, I'd be into it more if Wemby was from my country. Like, who cares? Oh my God, who cares? It's such a bizarre thing to get fixated on, but he's just like, man, we need Ant to kick some ass here because then we can have an American hero in the NBA. And just why does that matter? How on earth does that matter? I mean, it's just so strange.
Yeah, man, that's so funny. And we're going to transition now and go a little back to Bill historically, but that reminds me, and this kind of gets us there. For how many years has Bill been arguing that, hey, the 1990s, like mid-90s, late 90s after Jordan, he's like, the league overexpanded. All of these young guys came in. They got paid way too quickly. They weren't trying. And then everybody tried to be Jordan, and we had these terrible Jordan impressions by guys that shouldn't have been taking 25 shots a game. Weren't all those dudes American? I mean, like the Chris Webbers of the world, Vince Carter, Sean Kemp, Penny Hardaway. So that clearly did not matter. Whereas today, I think these playoffs, people are really getting into these, and it's because, you know, a little bit Bill Simmons-esque, we're looking at who's going to be the face of the league, who is going to be the champion. Yeah, it would be incredible if Edwards can go up there. It would be great if Jokic can win two in a row, and then that puts him into another level. Okay, can Tatum, he's not as good as those guys, but can he lead a great Celtics team, but he's not as good finally to the championship after they've been in the playoffs for so long? So Luka, of course, too, SGA. So there's so many storylines. Nobody cares about where Luka's from, where SGA is from. It's completely bizarre, and it goes against what he's been arguing in other times for so many years. But yeah, let's go back to the beginning, because you've reading him since page two, or maybe even earlier, but just curious myself, but also for the listeners, how did you get into Bill in the first place?
Because he was the Boston sports guy, and I was a Boston sports fan. And I mean, the thing about Bill is that he just caught lightning in a bottle in ways that it's just an unbelievable confluence of events that happened that there were these things that were like AOL, Boston, and all of these. It was basically a bunch of like kind of like it was like a kind of Craigslist kind of sort of setup where every city had its little neighborhood thing. And AOL let Bill Simmons be the sports writer for Boston. And he was the Boston sports guy. And then one thing led to another. And I think AOL was trying to homogenize all their content and having like a quote unquote personality doing the writing for like one city was kind of not what they were looking for. And then he managed to, through his writings there, get to ESPN, get to the page two on their website. And then he comes with that branding, the Boston sports guy. And this is happening in the late 90s and so on. And then wouldn't you know it, the Patriots win the Super Bowl for the first time in their franchise history. They go from being this laughing stock to now the champs. And then the Patriots become an ascendant dynasty. And then the Red Sox win the World Series and break the curse. And then like the Patriots have the perfect season and all this kind of stuff. And the Celtics win a title. So Bill just gets to ride this wave of just Boston excellence. And he's branded as the Boston sports guy. So it makes it so easy for him to just hold this cachet in the public's eye because he I'm from the town that now sports in America revolves around. And now you all have to listen to me because I know what I'm talking about when I talk about the Patriots and the Celtics and the Red Sox. And don't talk to me about the Bruins, because even though I'm the Boston sports guy and around here, we bleed hockey. Like hockey is a really important sport to us and the Bruins matter, but not so much to Bill, which has always made me laugh. I know in your other pod, you talked about the lack of Ringer NHL coverage, but it's also a glaring part of Bill that he is just sort of like hockey schmocky. If the Bruins are doing good, I might tune in. And I just think that's like really kind of funny that for someone who claims to be the Boston sports guy, like hockey is a distant fourth. And that's just like not the way it is around here. I mean, right now the Red Sox are a distant fourth because the ownership just ain't putting money in the team. And I would honestly say the Patriots are probably third right now because they're just so they're rebuilding and they're not great. So it's like in this town right now, it's Celtics 1, Bruins 2, and then the Patriots 3. And we'll see. I mean, but that's just a funny thing. So like that's how I got into Bill following him all those years. And because it was just like so cool that I had a guy that was talking about my teams who came from my city. And now we're on top of the world, baby. We're winning. And it was at the time, it was exciting and fun. And that's like why. And Bill had good takes for the most part. But eventually the industrial take complex got to him. Eventually the need to be like so crazy on takes like broke him as it breaks everybody.
All right. So question for you. Obviously he was helped by the Boston teams immediately winning in the Patriots case. And then the Red Sox took a couple years, but man, those Red Sox Yankees battles in the early 2000s were incredible. I'm not sure we've seen that since the MLB. So let's say Bill is in Seattle or Cleveland or what have you. Is he as big as he is now in your mind?
No, there's no way. Because, I mean, he might have gotten some level of traction from like being one of the first podcasters, like the way Joe Rogan's gotten traction for being an early podcaster. But I just don't know that I don't know that ESPN gives him a shot so much on page two if he's like the Cleveland sports guy, because God, I mean, who cares about Cleveland really at that point? At the very least, like Boston has at the time they had the Red Sox. You had Bledsoe and like the Patriots they'd been to a bowl. They were kind of relevant. And the Bruins were always in the playoffs, even though they wouldn't have a deep run and all that kind of stuff. And the Celtics had the mystique. So, I mean, that was we were just a more relevant city, and then we became super relevant. Whereas, like, my God, why would anyone care about the Seattle sports guy and that period of time? Like, Seattle has won one title in forever. They lost their basketball team. I mean, but if you listen to Bill, it was like his basketball team was taken away from him. That there's no one more upset about the Sonics moving than Bill. If you listen to him, oh my God, like,
Yeah, he what did he do? The Zombie Sonics was
the Zombie Sonics, and
like, for a while, yeah.
Yeah, and he was like saying things like, if your team wins a title, they can never move, and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, hey, I mean, I get it. It's awful that teams get like taken away from cities, but there's like no way to stop that. Welcome to America. I'm sorry, but yeah, like. Just talking about how the Take Machine eventually got to Bill, it reminded me of when, like, the first time he, like, really, like, just ran me up a wall, which was 4th and 2 back in the ancient times. So 4th and 2, for if you don't remember it, it's a kind of a Patriot deep cut, is basically the Patriots were having a regular season game against the Colts, and they got a 4th and 2 on their own side of the 50 late in the game. If they get a first down, they probably win. And they go for it. And to this day, I'm furious because Kevin Falk caught that ball. He had the first down. The referees said that he was bobbling the ball when he caught it and that the Colt pushed him back before he got possession of it. So they didn't give him the first down. They didn't give him forward progress. And I have watched football for, I don't know, 2 decades since that play. I have never seen bobbling called before or since. I've never heard of it. So as far as I'm concerned, the play was the right call. It worked. It was a first down. The refs jobbed the Patriots. And all I remember is that for like the entire week, I had to hear about how Belichick was a moron, how it was reckless, how like he's lost his mind and all this kind of stuff. And Bill didn't do like a recap column that week, and then he did his pick column, which was like on Thursday or Friday, so it was like way late. We'd already debated 4th and 2 to death, and suddenly Bill comes out on like Thursday or Friday with like a 1500 word column, Belichick, you moron, just killing him for 4th and 2. And it's like, Bill, this take is so cold. It's been 5 days. Like, how did you wait 5 days for your 4th and 2 take? And you're only saying what literally everybody else in America has said this whole time. You really think you needed to beat that dead horse with this one? And, I mean, I get it. You're from Boston, so you have to have a take. Why don't you zag? Why don't you just say Bill got it right? I mean, like, my God. And it was just... That was like one of the first times I just truly remember like reading a Simmons article and being like, "Oh God, this guy! Like, what are we doing here?" And I don't even think he did picks that week, or like comments on his picks. I literally think he just did a giant wall of text about 4th and 2, and then just like listed his picks at the bottom of the article. It was just like Pittsburgh over Philadelphia -3.5, like Baltimore over Detroit -6.5, and it was just like he didn't even want to do picks. He was so mad over 4th and 2.
Man, that's like, incredible. What I'm going to do is I have the article up right now. I'm not going to read it, but I'll when I put the podcast out, I'll link to this because this is a great one for the archives. And then you also wanted to bring up another infamous column where so one of the topics you want to talk about is Bill's refusal to let things play out and having to jump the gun with his takes, which obviously we've seen in 2024. But let's go back 17 years and let's go to 2007, where he compares the 2007 Patriots not yet having played their final game, but he compares their soon to be perfect season versus the 1986 Celtics. So how about we get your take on that?
And you're not even doing it justice. He didn't even wait for the AFC title game. He literally puts a bunch of little comments in, like, assuming the Patriots win these two games. But he's already booked it. He's already booked that they're winning the bowl. He's already booked that they're going to beat the Chargers. They're going to beat whoever comes out of the NFC. They're just going to win the title. And he's already doing a compare and contrast between the perfect 07 Patriots and the 86 Celtics. And it's like, what is the urgency for this? Who was asking for this? Can't you just wait for the Patriots to complete the perfect season before you write this? Like, why? Why do you need to get this out now? I mean, Like, I mean, it was humiliating enough that they lost the Super Bowl. But imagine if they had lost to Philip Rivers and playing on a torn ACL. Imagine if the Chargers had just gone into Gillette and beat the Patriots in the AFC title game with a one-legged Philip Rivers playing quarterback after Bill writes that article. I mean, my God. Like, it was so wild that he just had to do this, like, sort of – the 86 Celtics are the greatest Boston championship team ever. Let's compare them to the soon-to-be potentially greatest championship team ever. Like, why – like, to me, it's like if you're going to do this article, you just sort of tease the 07 Patriots. You just tease them. But you make the article about the 04 Sox against the 86 Celtics and what means more. The 04 Sox breaking the curse or the 86 Celtics and how dominant they were winning their third title. And then you compare and contrast that, and you just like put it in there that we might soon have like a third Boston sports team rise into the pantheon, because Bill loves the word pantheon. And then once we are a month down the line, after these 3 weeks have passed and the Patriots have obviously won their Super Bowl that they're going to win, we can then have a three-way debate between the 04 Red Sox, the 86 Celtics, and the 07 Pats. Nope, he doesn't do that. The 04 Red Sox, the curse-breaking Red Sox. I mean, Curt Schilling's a horrible human being, and we all hate him. But the team was Schilling, Martinez, Derek Lowe, Poppy, Manny Ramirez. I mean, just an absolute, just an absolute wagon of a team. That's such an easy compare. You can compare that team to the 86 Celtics so easily, and all the history, and coming back from 03, and all of that, and then just do a little winky winky about Brady and Moss, and how in a couple weeks I'm going to have a new article putting them in this conversation. Won't that be fun? And that way, when it all blows up in your face, you don't have to have people bringing up that article 17 years later and talking about what a huge lunatic you are.
Yeah, 17 years later on a podcast about your podcast. But yeah, for the listeners out there, I have the article up, so I want to read through some of his. So he does a what he calls the Dr. Jack breakdown, where he has topics. Then he says whether the Patriots, or the 07 Patriots, or the 86 Celtics have the edge. So one of them is flaw that held them back historically. Well, obviously the Patriots lost, so that was the flaw. The flaw was they didn't actually win the championship. We've got defining regular season game and defining playoff game, where he – so for defining playoff game, he writes, for the Patriots, it hasn't happened yet. Okay, Bill, why are you even writing the column then? Because if it hasn't happened yet, there's no reason to be writing it. So that's just hilarious. And then
because they had played one playoff game, they had beaten Jacksonville. That was it. They had a bye week, then they played Jacksonville, and that's it. And it's very funny because I am a diehard Patriot fan. I have like watched every game, like literally, I'm there for opening kickoff of every game, just like at the TV. I was living in Vegas in 07, and somehow, some way, my work schedule just got so screwed up that I fell asleep in the middle of the day, and I actually missed that game between Jacksonville and New England. Like, I literally woke up and then was like, oh no! And I ran to my computer and then saw the Patriots won. And I was like, oh, thank God. Like, that was like the one game in my life I just completely did not see a playoff, just totally missed it. And it was like, it was just so weird. So, but yeah, like that was it. Like Bill's like, I've only got one game to go off of, and no one's going to think that them beating Jacksonville in the divisional round was their defining moment. So, and he also had that thing about how like the Colts like ducked them the same way the Lakers ducked the Celtics, and we ended up playing the Rockets in the finals, like all of that. God.
Like, yeah. And then one final one here is so at the end of the column, he ends it. Final verdict, quote, we have to wait 3 weeks. For now, the Celtics have a slight edge, to be continued. So you just defeated the purpose of the entire column.
Yeah, exactly. This column should not, at the end of the column, you write, this column should not have been written. It's like, great. What an awesome article. Great job, buddy.
Yeah. All right, so to go back briefly to kind of the question of, is Bill popular because of the Boston teams or not? And then we'll go on to another topic. But I did want to add that the first few columns that Bill wrote for ESPN were Red Sox based. It was, is Roger Clemens the Antichrist? Which Roger Clemens, I think, and he wrote that in 2001. So he had been on the Red Sox for a while, had the 20 strikeout game, then goes to the Yankees, starts winning championships, was the best pitcher in the league with the Blue Jays for those 2 years. So pretty lucky for Bill that he was on the Red Sox first, then the Yankees, who were winning, to be able to write that. And then he writes about Nomar, which, man, I mean, Nomar was one of the faces of the league at that point. He was a good fielding shortstop, incredible hitting, personality. You know, he was much loved. So really had an amazing opportunity to write about these top tier sporting teams. So, yeah, I think there's a very easy argument to make. I mean, we'll never know the answer, right? But there's an easy argument to make that because he was focused on Boston, it at least helped him get the opportunity to then, okay, now when Bill's at ESPN, he writes, you know, 15 rules for being a sports fan, even though he doesn't follow them anymore because he calls his buddies up for podcasts after their team lost. And that was one of the rules, that you don't call your buddy up after a big loss. So he doesn't follow him anymore, but like he had that, and he was the first guy that was writing like that on a national stage. So I think at the very least, it's a very easy statement to say he was given more opportunity because he was from Boston. So I think that's fair.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, being a part of the Boston sports scene, like, it just gave him an easy in to being the guy. And I remember his early BS report, like interviews and stuff. I mean, it was really like hit or miss. I remember one time he had Tony Stewart, the NASCAR driver, on. Yes. And he mistakenly thinks that Tony Stewart's number is 33, and Tony Stewart's like, my number's 20. And it just like ruins the whole interview, because now Stewart thinks he's a moron. And I think like maybe Tony Stewart used the 33 on like a different lower tier racing circuit than NASCAR, but on NASCAR he never used the 33. And it was just like, my God, man, like, you couldn't do like 2 minutes of research before you bring this guy on your show to talk about like his career and stuff. Oh my God. Like, just that kind of like weirdly ill-prepared, just fly by the seat of your pants. Like, you heard this guy drives the 33 car, and you don't fact check it. You don't verify that little data point. Just all that kind of stuff. I mean, he was just always kind of a loosey-goosey dude, and just the universe just conspired to just let him aggressively just, I'm not going to say fail upwards, but he just kept going up no matter what happened to him, just always. And it was so strange. Like, he's on ESPN and stuff, and the next thing you know, he's running Grantland, and HBO's talking to him about doing stuff, and he just opportunity after opportunity and after opportunity falls in his lap, and he gets to do TV, and he gets to do all this other kind of stuff, and now he's running the Ringer, and it's just my God. I mean, what a one in a million bank shot for a dude that was literally just writing dumb stuff on AOL at the start of all of this.
Yeah. And using the Bill parlance, if you play his life 100 times, is this the number one, number two out of 100 times?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, it's one out of 1,000. I mean, it's literally the scene from Avengers Endgame. Doctor Strange is just having his head vibrate around, and he just like points out that like Bill becomes a trillionaire in one outcome of a 31 million. I mean, it's just like that. I mean, it's just so insane the way it breaks for him in this situation. And I mean, hey, like, more power to him. Like, congratulations, you made it. But at the same time, it's like, it's just something that I think that people really don't understand, is that there's so much happenstance and weird things that happen in our world that even if you don't see it yourself and you don't get that you caught a lucky break, there was some unseen force that got you a lucky break to get you somewhere. Like, there's like no one has ever quote unquote earned it the whole way through. Like, no one ever had it where like it was me and my force of will and my personality. I just did it all on my own. It's like, that's not how it actually works. Like, just one of the Bill talks about sliding doors moments, what ifs, like something has to break right for you at some point to where you end up like becoming way incredibly successful. And that definitely happened in Bill's case, like being on the internet at the right time, starting podcasting at the right time, being from the right city at the right time, like all that kind of stuff. And it's just like all of that. Like, you watch Game of Thrones back in the day, or you know of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, sure.
It's like the actress Maisie Williams, the actress who played Arya Stark, like literally her career is just insanity because she went to a talent festival thing in her town. And she wanted to do the dance class because all the kids wanted to do the dance class because dance is fun. And the dance class ended up being booked up. And then she couldn't do dance. So she's like, well, I'm stuck in this thing. What do I do now? So the improv class was open. So she went and did improv. And she's like, I don't know, like 12 or whatever at this time. She's like, she's a kid. So she does this improv class, bing, bang, boom. She walks away. She's like not happy that she couldn't do dance. And this like woman runs over to her and is just like, excuse me, small child, I'm not creepy or anything, but your improv was great. I would like to be your agent. And Maisie Williams is like, you're weird and creepy. And the person's like, take my business card. And the next thing you know, she gets an audition for a commercial. She doesn't get it. The next thing you know, her agent calls her up and says, hey, there's this show. You should audition for it. And she does. And it's Game of Thrones. And now she's a trillionaire. And it's just like that kind of stuff. Like that kind of weird, crazy, like just that could never happen, but it did. Like that kind of stuff is just like what is our world. And we're never going to know what that like event. I mean, it's probably that Bill knew a guy at ESPN and was begging him about stuff. And
yes, I was going to bring that up because I was going to think of two things, which is number one, one of his last podcasts for ESPN, I believe, it was something like ESPN, the website's 20th anniversary, something like that. And he talks about his career. Great podcast. I got to go back and listen to that. That'd be a fun one to listen to again. But he talks about how he was very close to going into real estate because it was the late 90s. He had done the bartending. He had then tried to do the column full time, barely making any money at all. And so ultimately, his family and probably his wife, I don't know if he said that in the pod, but they were saying, hey, you know, you basically got to get a real job here. You can't survive writing for, you know, whatever he was making at AOL. It couldn't have been that much. So he was so one in terms of luck, he was very close to quitting the writing.
And oh, then and AOL was about to lay him off, as I said before, like AOL was about to kick him off the site.
Yeah. And then number two is, yes. So he had, I think he talks about his friend, Gus Ramsey, at ESPN, and he was saying how he always was telling Gus, hey, you got to show these guys at ESPN my column because I think I should be writing for the site. And it didn't take. But certainly if Gus is the reason, his childhood buddy, that his ESPN, the ESPYs are a TV Holocaust ? If that was the column that got him hired. So if Gus put that column in front of ESPN, then boom, that's another, you want to call it luck, happenstance, whatever it is, that gets him in the door. And yeah, I mean, I think to your point, because you know, I'm early 30s. I think you're probably a little bit older than me, but
yeah, but I'm mid 40s. I'm an old dude. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, you know, as you go on, and like, I don't want to be Zoe Simmons at 19 saying I have life all figured out, but as you go on in life, and I'm sure you can attest to this, you do realize that like a lot of people are capable of things, but you're not always able to be put in the position or get yourself in the position to kind of prove that. So kudos to Bill, as we talked about, for an incredible career, but it wasn't necessarily always going to work out this way in every circumstance.
Oh no. I mean, that like, again, it's just like what you just said, is that he knows a guy, he's able to like get that guy to get his stuff in front of the right people to look at it. And they decide to give him a shot. He's on page two. But again, that's the whole thing, is that if he's the Seattle sports guy on page two, like, how much juice does he have of those articles? How much pop does that generate? I mean, he basically has to become like everybody else, and he has to go national almost immediately because his niche audience, his like quote, his city isn't a city that matters. They're not a relevant sports city. Whereas you said, like, Roger Clemens is the Antichrist article. That's 01. So the Patriots are about to win the bowl. I mean, so it's like, oh my God. And then in 03, the Patriots win the bowl again. The Red Sox and Yankees go to a dramatic game seven, and he gets to cry in his beer about Aaron Boone hitting the walk-off on them. I mean, he gets to, hey, Johnny! He gets to do that on his podcast with Jacko. I mean, it's just like, my God, he has the whole world in his hands at this point, because it's just all roads lead to Rome. All sports lead to Boston. I mean, it's just the way it is. And my God, what a lucky spot to be in for him.
Yeah. All right. So let's think about, so obviously he had the Boston sports down. Then he writes the Book of Basketball, which is 700 pages. I mean, it is the most Bill Simmons book you will ever read for a variety of reasons. It's got his whole pyramid of all the players. And I mean, Bill, I call him out for not doing his research these days, but he did his fucking research for this book. I mean, it is, you know, and whether you agree with the analysis or not, he went back MVP voting, read Sports Illustrated, read several, probably underselling it. It seems like he read tens maybe of books, or at least excerpts of books of Bill Russell writing about Wilt Chamberlain, stuff like that. I mean, again, Bill could be biased, you know, in what he was doing, but all of the legwork he did to create this book is pretty incredible. However, as has been coming to light from my Twitter account and others, there is some unsavory passages in that book. And I think one that I've talked about on the pod before, but we've mentioned it chatting and on Twitter, is the whole pulling the goalie on his wife for his second child. And yeah, I mean, so that's one. There's the stripper stuff. There's the women's friends group. You know, even for then, that was a little dicey. So yeah, I just wonder what people think of that now. And sometimes I do get that on Twitter, where I will retweet or tweet out one of those passages, and some 27-year-old media member, sometimes a woman, goes, "Oh my goodness, I never saw this before." So it's very interesting seeing that. You know, we are now looking at this at a different lens in 2024 than we used to.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Bill's misogyny was just rampant back in the day. I mean, I remember him talking about like the Groupie Olympics and the All-Star, and he was obsessed. He was obsessed about talking about women ovulating and trying to get themselves on with an NBA player so they could get a kid with them. I mean, oh my God. I mean, the dude just like yeah, in the back of
James and Serena should have a baby together.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Like this dude really cared about women trying to get pregnant so they could like get a guy on the hook for money. I mean, and it was just so, it's like, man, like, why? It's like his weird obsession with an American star in the NBA. It's like, why is that something that you're concerned about? I mean, it's like, that's a part of sports that's always existed, that like these guys that are famous, they sleep around and then some of those women have kids. And yeah, that's the way this works. When you're famous, rich, and a dude, that happens. That's how life works. And he was just really obsessed with that. And what you just said about Ben Simmons, I don't know why you would write that. That is such an unbelievably bizarre thing to write. That, I mean, if you had a parent write that about you, like, yeah, that is a thing that you're going to hear about for like the rest of your life. Like, I've heard like Bill, I mean, Lord knows what it means, but again, Bill's rich and powerful. His kids are going to be Nepo babies. They can do anything they want. And like Bill makes like these comments about, oh, maybe my kid will go to the WWE Performance Center. Maybe he'll start throwing stuff around. And like, if Ben Simmons was a pro wrestler as he's walking to the ring, like people are going to yell at him, your mom didn't want to have you. And like, why would you like make that a thing that people would know and would be saying? Like, it's so strange that like, to be like, oh yeah, by the way, my wife wanted to wait a few years for our second kid, but I'm getting up there in age. So I just did a few things, you know, and next thing you know, my wife's throwing a pregnancy test at me and getting all kinds of upset. Oh, me, that wacky prankster Bill Simmons, just knocking up my wife without her consent. What a kidder I am. And it's just like, what, like, wow. Like, to do that is bad enough to then publicly, like, talk about how cool it was that you did it. Like, whoa, that is just, my God, the lack of common sense. Just like, even yeah. Back then, that was weird. Even back then, I was just like, whoa, wait, really, man? Like, really? That was your move?
Yeah. Yeah. One, it wasn't even funny. And yeah, second, you're totally right. It was a very, it was short-term thinking, because I mean, I guess at least from, if you're Bill and the internet's kind of new in the early 2000s and podcasting is new, so he has some of these columns where he says some unsavory stuff. Maybe he's thinking like people aren't going to be looking at these in 20 years. He has his conversations with Adam Carolla, which I retweet from time to time, about women, and he might be thinking, yeah, like, we're the podcasting, it's new, it's not going to take off, people aren't going to be listening to this in 20 years. So not that I'm defending him saying all that stuff, but at least maybe that could be the thought process where you can be a little loose. The Book of Basketball, that is a written work that the point of writing a book is to stand the test of time. It doesn't live on the internet. It lives in physical form. And for him to clearly understand that, because in creating the Book of Basketball, he's reading these books from 40 years ago. I mean, these are written pre-internet. He's even looking at newspapers, I think, too, but he's looking at newspapers and Sports Illustrated magazines. So he is very clearly aware that this will be on, when people discuss Bill Simmons, they're going to be discussing his book of basketball for decades to come, just like he has read those books from decades before. And yet he still puts that in there. So, yeah,
right.
Very, very bizarre.
Well, and like, that's the thing, is he wants the Book of Basketball to be a historical document. He wants people to be like, I want to learn about basketball, and I've heard good things about this Bill Simmons book. I better buy it and read about it. And in that book, he mentions like pulling that stunt on his wife. And it's just like, yeah, what you just said is like, yeah, maybe back then you didn't know the phrase "the internet is forever." Maybe that was possible, but you know, books are forever. And more important than that, you're not writing a book that's like a weird snapshot. You're not writing a book that's like about the 04 Patriots or something. So if people stop caring about that year of the Patriots, they're not going to read it. Like the Michael Hurley books, like the Patriot Reign books and stuff like that. Like, it's a niche topic about one team. Bill wrote a book that was literally the Book of Basketball. So, like, if you care about literally the second most popular sport in America, you're going to know about that book, and you might purchase it to learn about basketball. And then you're also going to learn about the conception of Ben Simmons, which, why do I need to learn about that?
God, it's so good. All right, so a couple other things you wanted to talk about. So you basically got kind of a thought about basically like Bill, and you talked about this earlier, so this jives with what we talked about, where basically he has devolved from Bill Simmons into Skip Bayless, and how essentially having dumb takes, having hot takes, that is just providing content and feeding into social media these days. And if anything is actually beneficial, and I'll say one more thing before passing it to you. So I totally agree with you, by the way. And I think that like when I have the younger guys on this podcast that are young 20s, they almost don't understand why Bill is so popular. They just think he's a hilarious old dude with horrible takes. And for some reason, that makes its way through NBA Twitter, and NBA Twitter responds to it. So, like, that's what Simmons has become to the younger generation. And then to our generation, we go, this guy is a clown compared to what he used to be. He's become Skip Bayless.
And that's the problem, is that with PTI and Pardon the Interruption, and Around the Horn. You knew exactly the other show I was trying to go for. Yeah. Around the Horn, PTI, like First Take, Undisputed, all this stuff. You just now have this, just all these shows where you got to get out there. You got to have a hot take. You got to say something. You got to scream and yell. And it's made it so that being a stupid clown is not detrimental to your career. I mean, I remember somebody back in the day posted a thing that was like the five Skip Bayless takes. And it was like LeBron, the Dallas Cowboys, Tebow, and like two other things that I forget. But it's just that. It's just like literally you find important topics in each sport, and you just hitch your wagon to one take that you will never let go. And it doesn't hurt you if your take becomes incredibly stupid, like, because people just know that you're going to have your stupid take because you're doing a bit and they're going to look for it. I mean, like all the people that hated Tom Brady, it was just literally just them eating shit year after year, and it didn't hurt them. You still tuned in because you wanted to see them do it. You wanted to see them go, that Brady won another one. Gosh darn it, he's just better than I thought. But he's still gonna go off the cliff. He's still gonna fall off the cliff. Like they're gonna cling to the take because they know the take brings you in. So it's embarrassing to see what Bill's become, and it's embarrassing to see his sycophantic guests like not acknowledging that the Emperor's not wearing any clothes anymore. But what we're doing right now with Bill, where we're going viral with his bad takes, it's just making him go viral. And being a rodeo clown doesn't hurt you in the grand scheme of things, because, hey, you're the guy I see on TV and you like say dumb things, but I'm still going to listen to you because I want to laugh at your dumb things. It's like the scene in, I'm going to reference a movie. I'm going to pull a Bill, but it's like the scene in Private Parts where the guy tells him that the people that hate listening to Howard Stern listen to him longer than the people that like listening to him. And I mean, it's like kind of like that. Like, he's practically, he's inviting you to dunk on him. Like, there are so many people in politics, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, and I promise anyone who's like their political hackles raised right now, I promise I'm going to try to make this as apolitical as I possibly can while saying my point. But like Marjorie Taylor Greene will post something, and she will post it deliberately with misspellings, and she will post it to be inflammatory. And the reason why she does these things is because she wants people to quote tweet her and point out the fact that she misspelled words and that she's a huge dum-dum and that she's wrong and stupid. And she knows that doing that will make the tweet go viral. It will get her more attention. It will get her more clicks. It will attract more people to her. And this is something that, like, I mean, I can't do it at the very moment, but if you give me a day, I can like pull up like a bunch of tweets of hers like that. That in her and Lauren Boebert both do it. They deliberately misspell things while they write inflammatory tweets because they know that kind of thing is catnip for people to dunk on. And that's the problem. We've created a dunk economy where being the clown on the little pedestal that falls into the vat of water when someone hits the target to make them drop, like being that clown is just a good thing now. It's just, hey, buddy, your girlfriend's fat. You can't throw me in this water. $5, buddy. Like everyone wants to be that clown now. And they know that they'll get money if they are an entertaining, dumb clown. So that's where our sports media is now, where it's like, if you have reasoned, measured, solid takes, it's hard to go viral. It's really hard to go viral. I mean, you've got to get red in the face. You got to start yelling and screaming. Have you seen this guy that popped in my algorithm recently? Awful coaching. He does like NBA defense breakdowns.
I've not seen that, no.
Oh, this guy, Awful Coaching on YouTube, like the algorithm, like he picked him up. Like sometimes he'll do happy videos about good defense, but when he if you ever see a video where it's just like these people suck, it's just 9 minutes of him screaming. It's 9 minutes of him just red in the face yelling. And that's basically all we want our sports broadcasters to be now, is people just screaming the same like five things over and over again. Like this guy's like literally yelling, ice the screen, back to the baseline, seeing ball and man. And it's just 9 minutes of him yelling that and then playing a clip. And you see the Cavaliers screwed it up and Tatum gets a wide open three. And then he just keeps doing it. And it's just because the NBA is endless content. This guy can make like three videos a day just screaming about bad defense. And it's just, he's found his niche. It's great. It's unreal.
All right. So then this brings me a few questions, because as you're talking, I'm thinking a couple things. Number one, do we think the shift to much more of the hot take culture is a deliberate shift by Bill? To go more viral and to get more popular? And was it inevitable that Bill would become a hot take artist anyway, for two reasons? Number one being just inevitably you become a parody of yourself after you've been doing this for 10, 20, 30 years, just like Page Do Bill was making in front of Mike Francesa. Was that inevitably going to happen to Bill Simmons if he kept doing this? Or was the culture that devolved into the hot take culture, is Bill just following that culture? And so he's just a reflection of what media is in 2024. And so he's become that. So I know I packed a lot in there, but I'm just curious of kind of like, why is Bill Simmons being the Bill Simmons of 2024 when he previously was not that way?
The chicken egg thing. It's very interesting. I feel like the 07 article kind of like shows that he always had it in him to want to jump the gun. And I think that, I don't know that he necessarily sees it as being like a hot take thing. I think that he just sees, he saw what he was doing as being like strong and right. And he wanted to get there first. He wanted to be the first guy to crown the Minnesota Timberwolves NBA champions and Ant as the face of the NBA. And I think that like when you have your belief in your head, you don't see it as a hot take and you don't see it as being irrational. Because, I mean, again, in that pod, he's super defensive. He's like, look, I'm not prisoner of the moment. I'm not saying this is going to happen. This is just the what if column. And then he tries to throw disclaimers in there while he's doing it. But at the same time, he's doing it. He's like saying those things. And I just think that when you're in this kind of spot, the other thing is that you think you know it. You think you've solved the puzzle. Like it was one thing. He brought up like when Bird was broken down and he ran into Rodman, and he brought up like when the Lakers ran into the 04 Pistons. He was just like, you know, sometimes you just run into a buzzsaw and people don't see it coming, and then it happens and it does. Like he said it in that part. He's like, as a fan, I've seen this a few times. So he really thought with his keen basketball knowledge and awareness that he knew exactly how this Minnesota-Denver series was going to play out, and that the Minnesota buzzsaw was going to go right through the Nuggets. And then when he was wrong, the problem is, and they've brought this up before, the problem is that he just won't acknowledge he's wrong. It's the hypocrisy. Yes. It's not getting a take wrong. It's that you sidestep the fact that you got it wrong, the fact that you're just that you after the fact, you're like, oh, I thought Murray was more hurt than he was. And it's like, no, just own your wrong take. That's all we want. Just be like, look, guys, I just thought Minnesota think you had this in the bag. They won the first two on the road. Towns looked ridiculous. They won game two without Gobert. I mean, my God, you're getting the defensive player of the year back. And now he's like, compare that bum. Oh, Jokic is working him in like a speed bag. Maybe they shouldn't play him in game six. I mean, he's already doing that pivot. I mean, my God. But it's just that. It's just, I think when people follow you and they listen to you, all they really want from you is accountability for what you say. And when you're wrong, you got to own it. And that's what he's not doing. That I think that's the most galling part of it, is that like what I just said before about how you can be the clown and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, when the person hits the target, you have to fall into the vat of water. Mm. You have to get humiliated. And that's why we tune in to Skip Bayless's show after LeBron wins a title. That's why we tune in after the Cowboys lose, because we want Skip to do the shit eat. We want to see him through gritted teeth be like, you know, LeBrick James turned it around and he got it done, and I have to acknowledge that. Like, that's what we as media content eaters and absorbers want out of our rodeo clowns, out of our carnival clowns. And the fact that Bill has defiantly refused to acknowledge what he said, that's what makes it galling. Like, literally, he said dumb stuff. We paid $5 to the guy at the front of the booth. We got the ball. We threw it at the target. We hit the target, and Bill did not fall in the water. Mm. Bill is just still standing on that platform yelling at me, telling me that my girlfriend's fat. And it's like, no, we have a social contract that when you're wrong, you acknowledge your wrongness. Like, you have to fall in, you have to fall in the pool. And he's just like, oh, no, I thought Jamal Murray was hurt. It's like, no, you didn't. You didn't, you liar. You lying scum. Like, Jamal Murray was a throwaway line 22 minutes in.
God, that's so good. Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I think you totally nailed it. And then I also think it's the arrogance piece. It's exactly what you said when he goes, I've been through a bunch of these before. So he's trying to, you know, he's using the appeal to authority, right? He's saying, look, like, I wrote the book of basketball. I've been potting about NBA for 20 years. I had a front row seat to the 80 Celtics with my dad. Like, I know what the secret to basketball is because I saw up close these amazing Celtics teams. So he's a kind of like implying all that when he talks NBA. Also, he will use the, hey, I saw these guys in person and you don't understand this player. You don't know how good this team is unless you're in person. Hey, I was two rows away from the bench and I saw the team interacting. Like, hey, those LA Clippers teams of the late 2000s or whatever, like, I knew they weren't going to win the title because I saw Blake and JJ and Chris Paul interacting on the bench because I was two rows away.
Like, I was the body language doctor. I saw their body language. It wasn't good. Body language Dr. Bill didn't like it.
Yeah, so he's got all that. And so I think when you combine, and I think it's arrogance, I think it's fair to say that, when you combine that arrogance with the unwillingness to admit he's wrong, that's why these takes have been going viral. I mean, yeah, like I'm tweeting these out now, and other people have clipped things from back in the day, but like they're really hitting now. And I think the reason is because a lot of people, whether it's me and you that are older and listening for a while, or whether it's the newbies, people are like sick of his shit. They're like, this guy, exactly what you said, isn't properly taking it. And we're done with it. And because he's not, we're more and more willing to call him out for it. And it's just, it's beautiful. And I'm so glad that I'm finding people like you on Twitter that we can chat about this with, because like you said at the beginning of the pod, you've been dying for someone to go after Bill like this. And I'm like, yeah, I've been dying for it too. And I finally decided to do it. And it's kind of worked out. It's been great.
This is what you just said. Like, I don't know why this jogged this memory in me, but I just remember that he wrote this article after the Patriots lost the Super Bowl to the Giants in 07. And he talked about the pain. He talked about the helmet catch. He talked about Eli being in the grasp. He did all that stuff. And he wrote about just watching the Patriots like trudging off the field defeated and the Giants now parading around in the confetti and getting the trophy and like all that. Bill did the shit eat. Like, that's like that. Like, when you're a Bill Simmons hater, when you're a Bill Simmons hater or a Patriot hater and the Patriots lose that Super Bowl, you need Bill to write that column. And he wrote it. He did it. He was like, my team lost the biggest game ever. These are my thoughts. This is the way I'm dealing with my pain. This is what happens. And that's like, I bought the ball. I threw it. I hit the target. Bill fell in the pool. That was the old Bill. He would fall in the pool. Now he won't. Now he's not standing by his take. And the other thing that is really frustrating is that you're the Boston sports guy. And I mean, I know he's gone national. I know he's the basketball guy in a way. But it's like, Bill, your hook, your niche is that you're the Boston guy. You're the Celtic guy. You're the Celtic person. But he, like, this whole playoffs, he's just put up the deflector shield on the Celtics the whole way, and he refuses to acknowledge they can win the title. Yep. And he's just like, Denver or Minnesota is going to beat Boston in the finals, and that's just it. And it's like, why are you doing that? I mean, it could be because you're just older and you're guarding yourself against the Boston loss personally. But like, for me, if I literally broke into the industry as the Boston sports guy and my team trades for Porzingis, they trade for Drew Holiday, Tatum and Brown are just beating the crap out of everybody. Derek White is just electric. You got all these guys coming off the bench, raining threes. Like, why would you not lean into it? Why would you not lean into the Celtics being the best team and like being like, I'm back in my Boston team and we're going to see how this goes and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's really strange to me that it's very likely we're going to go into an NBA finals between a Boston team and the opponent, probably Denver. And you're going to have the Boston sports guy being, yeah, Denver in six. Yeah, Denver. And it's like, really? You're the Boston sports guy. And you're saying the Boston team is going to lose? What is going on here?
So I love that and beautiful. What I'll do is I'll link to some of these columns in the episode description, because for the listeners who have not read these are golden. So in that column, which perfectly aligns with what you said, he gives the intro of, you know, I was set. I had a connection with Tom Brady's people, and I had the scene set in my head. I had a column ready to go. It was going to be Brady with a small circle. He's icing his leg. He's got champagne on ice, and he's sitting back, relaxing, and just loving the fact that he went 19-0 and completed the first perfect season, or the first 19-0 season of all time, the greatest team of all time. And then he ends the paragraph, and he's like, that's all it's going to be, a dream. And it's like, dude, that is exactly what we wanted to hear. So that was so beautiful that he sets us up for this amazing scene, and it's like, poof, it's gone. So that was him falling in, which was great. And, right. And yeah, and so he doesn't do that anymore. And you go, that's why people – and that leads me to my second point, which is I've been on the Bill Simmons subreddit now since 2016. I mean, you want to call me obsessed? I'm fine to admit I'm obsessed. You find it funny. It's gone from like 1,000 members to 60,000 among that time. But what I will say to that is I definitely do not remember the sub just loving the Celtics losing. Like when the Celtics lose a game, any playoff game these days, the sub goes wild in celebration and loving the fact that the Celtics lost. I don't think this used to be a thing. Now, I think some people rooted against Boston sports, obviously, because they were winning a lot. But people listening to Bill Simmons, or hate listening, whatever you want to call it, and actively, severely rooting against Boston teams because of Bill Simmons, because they want to see him fail, that's new. And just talking now, I'm thinking maybe the reason for that is because since Bill won't admit it now, in his writing and his podcast that he is wrong, the one way to have Bill eat shit is his team's losing. And so maybe that connects back to why people so aggressively root against those teams now. And it's because Bill just won't ever take the L on anything else.
It's very possible. And while you were saying that, it unlocked the thing in my brain again, that he's setting up these NBA finals to be perfect for him, where if Denver wins the title, he'd be like, I told you, Jokic is unstoppable. This Nugget team, they just execute better than everybody. They're just they're the third best team of this of the last like 24 years. They're a juggernaut. And then if the Celtics win, he's like, my team won! Woo! Celtics, banner 18, we did it! We beat the monster. And I mean, it's literally a heads I win, tails you lose. I mean, it's the perfect setup to just make it so that the team that you obviously have a vested rooting interest for is the underdog and all that stuff. And I remember the Celtics like lost two very close games to the Nuggets in the regular season. And Bill asked Russillo, he's like, what would you consider the gap between the Celtics and the Nuggets? And Russillo said, insurmountable. And I just like, and I almost just like threw my car into a telephone pole when I heard that. I was just like, these were like 4-point games. How can he's like, and the two of them just went on this whole thing about how end of the games, Jokic is just going to execute. They're just going to win. They're just undeniable. And it was just, the fact that they had just set up Denver as this unbeatable force that literally just there was just no way to stop them. They were just like the Borg in Star Trek. And it was just, I was like, my God, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, like you guys even mentioned at one point that I think it was, I may be mistaken, but like, I think like Tatum had a 3-pointer that if they'd hit that, it would have given them the lead. And again, these are regular season games. And I remember at some point during the conversations, Bill said something about how at the end of these games, if the Celtics start playing through Porzingis, that's like the one player that other teams fear, and it might unlock their late game offense, and it's a card they have yet to play, and they might do it. So like even after declaring Denver's inevitable victory in the NBA Finals, Bill was like still trying to figure out ways that Boston could overcome them. And it's just that it just having your cake and eating it too, like making your prediction in such a way that people can't get mad at you if Boston wins. And if they, and you're not going to care because that's the team you actually want to win. And just lean into it. Just admit you want the Celtics to win and it's going to be tough. But I mean, my God, Bill has spent the last 20 years talking about nothing else but game 7 at home. Got to get game 7 at home. And that's what the Celtics are going to have in the NBA Finals. And that just doesn't matter. Jokic is just going to go through them anyways.
So I absolutely love that point. And I think it comes right back around to how we began the podcast. Because why do we think Bill overreacted so much? Because you correctly laid out that he was setting up the Nuggets as an all-time team. So when the Celtics lost to them, it's okay. Jokic, 3 in MVPs in 4 years, back-to-back. He's already top 10, maybe top 5 chance at the Pantheon. So like, okay, I win-win. I'm the biggest Jokic guy. I can't say that correctly, but whatever. I'm the biggest guy.
Joker, just call him Joker.
Jokic, whatever. People, whatever. But okay, so he has that. He has that for the entire season. Then round two, they go down 2-0. Immediately pivots to the insane ant thought experiment. And now this is making more sense to me because the win-win that he had set up for Celtics losing or winning against the Nuggets, now he had to immediately pivot and set up the win-win for when Minnesota wins. So then he's like, I'm fucking all in on Ant, even though we do have the sound bites that he wasn't in on Ant when he was drafted. But he and Russillo, they're huge Ant guys. They love Ant. I'm not comparing him to MJ, but I am. He's going to go SNL. So like now Bill's building up, oh, Team USA, all that stuff. So once again, setting himself up for the win-win, which goes back to Bill not being able to take the L and people wanting to make fun of this guy, which ultimately that is the reason I'm doing this podcast and why you're guesting on this podcast is because we've become so frustrated with him not taking the L and being so arrogant that we got to call this guy out. And that's what we're doing.
Right, exactly. And that what you just said, like that 07 article is how you take the L gracefully, that
Yeah.
you acknowledge that you had a big plan, that you had this huge payoff, that you were going to have this like actually kind of career defining moment where you were going to be in the room with Tom Brady as he was like holding up the Lombardi, and then you're just like, and I didn't get it. And those pesky Giants and Eli Manning took it all away from me. And now, instead of that, like we're just setting this up to the Nuggets win the NBA title, and like Simmons and Russillo go on the pod. There's like Jokic, what can you do? Best player in the world. Like, and Bill's gonna tell us that Jason Tatum still can go up a level because he's been telling us that for like the last 5 years. Jason Tatum's gonna be 33 years old and he's still not gonna be a finished product in Bill Simmons' mind. Like, literally, the unfinished product is Jason Tatum's nickname. I mean, the guy just it's unbelievable. And but it's like it's just that he's just like put up this force field. Where his the if the home team loses, it's no harm, it's no skin off his nose. And if the juggernaut that he had set up to destroy his hometown team loses, that doesn't matter either. He'll just have the team that beat the juggernaut become the new juggernaut and they'll do it. And to me, it's just like, what would make you think? I mean, admittedly, beating Denver would be a massive feather in the cap of the Timberwolves, but the NBA Finals is a bigger stage. It's brighter lights. It's higher stakes. Like when Milwaukee played Phoenix in the finals, like there were like the end of the game, there was like that one play where like Devin Booker just like freaked out and lost the ball, and Milwaukee won the game. And it's just like you don't know what the pressure of the finals is until you're there and you've gone through it. And like in a Minnesota Boston series, I would really like Boston's chances because Tatum and Brown have lost in NBA finals. They've been through the fire. They know what it's like to lose that situation. And Cat and Ant and all those guys, they've never played in the finals. They don't know what it's like. Like that would, if the Celtics were not favored in that finals, like I'd be gobsmacked, and I would be glad to bet money on the Celtics as an underdog in that spot. But we literally had Bill do a monologue about how, look, DraftKings has just got a lot of money on the Celtics for the whole
Oh,
year, and that's why the Celtics odds are what they are. But Minnesota is the better team, and they should be the favorite in that series. And Bob, and it's like, my God, Bill, my just. Just bet the Wolves. Just bet the Wolves. You're a trillionaire. You don't need the money anyways, but just tell us that the Wolves are going to win and put the money on it. Tell us there's value in it. My God, it was just like just literally shouting, "The Celtics are not better than Minnesota. I don't care what the money says." It's just, Jesus, calm down, buddy.
yeah, that was definitely one of my favorite moments from the monologue was when he goes, "Yeah, Minnesota should definitely be favored over the Celtics. Like, I don't care what exposure Vegas has and what they think. Like, they got to be favored." All right, Bill. I mean, we know what you're doing here.
Right. I mean, it's just that. It's just that. That's why this exists, is because you now have a situation where this is what happens when you become incredibly successful and incredibly influential and powerful to the point where your guests are not, there's a power dynamic, there's a power imbalance where you're the host of this powerful, very much viewed, much listened to pod. If people go on it, they build their brands, they become kind of celebrities. I mean, just being Bill's buddy gets you a show. Like Joe House now probably makes a lot of money just because he's Bill's friend and he gets to do all these shows now. And it's like that level of access and influence coming from Bill means that you can't go on that show and say, "No, Bill, I listened to what you said about Minnesota. It wasn't about Anthony Edwards. You thought the Wolves were a bad matchup for the Nuggets. You said you've seen this a bunch of times and that this was a changing of the guard moment. Like that was your actual take, Bill." And I mean, my God, Bill would just like bristle like a porcupine at that person. He would like shoot quills into them until they ran away. I mean, like that would never happen. And that's why all his guests are like, "Oh no, you just thought Jamal Murray was hurt. So that's why you said what you said, Bill. Please let me come back on the pod in a couple weeks." Just
Yeah, I think I wrote to some people on Twitter. I said, because I made some memes about Justin Termine, and I was having a back and forth, and I said that, look, I get why he did it, but I don't have to respect it. And that's exactly why, because he wants to be back on the pod and back benefiting from Bill. But hey, we had one more topic, but I'm thinking we had a great run here of 80 minutes. We talked about kind of before for you potentially coming back, and I thought this was great. I had a blast doing it, so would love for you to come back at some point when we can hit on topic three that we wanted to hit on. But yeah, man, I think unless there's anything else that we need to hit on tonight specifically, I thought this was great. I thought we covered a lot, and I always like this too. I always like us covering new ground on the pod, which I feel like we did. I feel like some of the discussions about why Bill, because we all know that Bill has turned out this way, but some of the discussions on why Bill has turned out the way he has, I don't think I've had those in the pod before. So I think people are really going to get a kick out of that.
Oh man, you put up the bad signal. I will be there. I will be on the
Excellent.
pod whenever. I'm here. I'm here for this. This is the kind of content I crave. So I am down. I mean, we'll see. Well, like tonight, we are like they've just tipped off Denver and the Timberwolves. It's just started in the first quarter. It's a 2-point game right now, so it doesn't matter. But I mean, me personally, like I'm a Celtics homer. I want the Celtics to win the title. Like I want Denver and Minnesota to go seven. I want Ant and Jokic to crash into each other and both turn their ankles. The one thing that is happening here, I don't, are you from Boston? Are you immersed in the Boston media
Yeah,
right
so
now or?
I'm from New England, and if I had to pick an NBA team, I would pick the Celtics. I'm a huge Red Sox fan. That's my number one sport. I'm probably number two Pats fan. NBA don't care as much. If I root for somebody, it is Boston, but I don't really care that much. I root for the storylines.
Oh yeah, I get it. But no, the main reason why I bring that up is just because you have Felger and Maz are like drive
I
home
am familiar with
show.
those guys, yes.
Yeah, like Maz has been making the point that like this Celtic title, were they to win it, is going to be fraudulent because they will have played nobody in the East. They will have had a cakewalk to the finals, and I just want the cakewalk to be even the cakewalkiest cakewalk.
A
I
win,
want.
a championship is a championship.
Right, that's the counter argument everyone's making is that nobody that you beat the people that they put in front of you and you hoist the trophy. That's the objective, and that's the kind of scalding hot Boston sports talk radio take that you're getting right now is that this Celtic title won't count if they win it because all the teams they played were too banged up. So I'm
Wow, I
hoping
did
that.
not know that was happening.
Yeah, that's happening. It's great. So I'm just hoping I'm hoping we get to have that double extra large, and you just see like Nikola Jokic in street clothes for the NBA Finals because like he just popped his meniscus or something in the Western Conference Finals, and you just have Tony Maz just like literally spitting blood 2-6 on the Sports Hub every day as Tommy from Quincy calls him up and goes, Tatum got his ring. Yeah, it's wicked pissa. I mean, so.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I've yeah, being in New England, I got the or I get Comcast Sportsnet or whatever, so or whatever the channel is. So I'll see those guys occasionally. And I mean, hey, maybe in another life, Bill's doing Hot Take Radio.
Oh God. Oh man. Oh man. Like you saying that just made me think of Bill being on part of a zoo crew in the morning. He's just like sitting there at the soundboard playing all the dumb weird noises. He's like, it's Bill and the shark on 93.3. It's just.
Oh man. But yeah, dude, this is a blast. I had a ton of fun. And yeah, I think, yeah, like we talked about before the show, maybe pop before
Correction. It is
during the
now
NFL season.
it is now 20-9 Minnesota. So let's go game seven. It's gonna go on SNL. It's happening.
God. Oh, 18-0 run. Wow. Okay. So this will be pure comedy then, because Bill's gonna have to come right on after this game. And well, we're saying this right now, it'll change probably, but yeah, like I'm just rooting for the maximum hilarity with Bill and his takes. Like that's what I'm going for.
Well, the thing is that Bill's going to throw in the if this goes to game seven and Bill does a pod between game six and game seven, he's going to throw in the towel. He's going to do this totally spineless game seven. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm just going to enjoy it. Like that's going to be his hard and fast stance on game seven. He'll probably say, gun to my head, I'm taking Denver, but that will be the tiny tentative baby step he takes towards a prediction. Cause he just knows that he's whipsawed himself on his takes so badly that if this does go to a game seven, he has no outs. He's praying for Denver to win in six so he can just talk about Jokic solved him, figured it out, supercomputer, best player in the world, no doubt about it. So, yeah.
I love that. Okay, so we will have that in audio. I'll clip that audio before Bill. Well, no, actually, I won't because I'll release this tomorrow. But we'll have it in the pod. We recorded it tonight. We don't know what happened, and I hope that happens because then we'll see if you were right. And I'm gonna guess you're exactly right. If Minnesota wins, that's exactly what he's gonna say.
Yeah, we'll see.
Love it, man. Hey, appreciate the time. Really, you know, everybody taking their time out of their day to come record and then also listen. So appreciate the listeners and. Yep. Yeah, unless you got any final words, thanks again for coming on, and we'll see the listeners soon.
Yep, thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, cheers, everybody.